I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Stephanie Wessel. She is a river guide and activist with a group called Paddling with Purpose. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much, Mary Charlotte. I've been a fan of the show for years.
So. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yay. So what is Paddling with Purpose all about?
So we are a group of international and Peruvian river lovers, and we are going to take a group of Peruvians who've never been down the river and get them to learn a little bit about their natural heritage and hopefully get them to learn about why that river ecosystem is so important to Peru and that it would be worth it to stand up against the Peruvian government and big Brazilian dam companies to not build a massive dam on the upper Amazon.
So what they're doing, and this is a story that it's like deja vu all over again every week, every year, is building or trying to build another giant hydroelectric power plant in order to provide energy for extractive mining companies, which is basically the way that a lot of South American countries are trying to build their economies, is through those industries.
Yeah, exactly. It's international companies. They're Brazilian, they're American, they're Canadian, and they get these permits to extract minerals from these areas where indigenous people live, and they tend to pollute all of the groundwater, use all of the water from these high alpine lakes, and very rarely are the people who live there actually consulted. And when they do make a stand against these mining companies sort of destroying their own natural heritage and the land that they make a living off of, that they make a life off of, they come back at them with force and terrorism.
Including the police and government authorities,
yeah,
are
exactly.
The terrorists.
Yeah, it's really depressing because there's also not a lot of good news out there about it. So it doesn't seem to be reported widely, and it's probably something the Peruvian government doesn't want to tell anyone, or any of the governments really want to tell their people is going on. They don't want to be held to account because they're getting money from these big mining companies a lot of times. And also, the other aspect of this is that it's not just for mining, but the rest of this energy is probably going to be sold to Brazil, because Brazil has a huge demand on growing their energy. But really, you know, the Peruvian government is going to tell its citizens that this is for creating self-sufficiency for their own energy, but really none of that energy is going to the Peruvian people, and definitely not to the people who are going to be flooded out by the reservoir behind the dam.
So you are going to a place where people are basically going to be, if this dam project goes through, displaced and relocated, and their land will be underwater.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is in most of these large dam projects, especially in developing countries, but even if you look at the history of the United States, it happened here as well. The indigenous people, who are usually the people that are living really well and sustainably along the sides of those rivers, are promised some sort of resettlement, some sort of compensation, and then it never really comes through, or it comes through in such a way that they're worse off than they were before, which is just a violation of common sense and basic human rights, I think.
There is a big picture with this, aside from the fact that extractive industries are by definition a short-term gain kind of thing, because once minerals are extracted, mines of whatever kind are just left there with enormous environmental consequences. Even that aside, the environmental and social consequences of hydroelectric dams themselves turn out to be not even worth the cost of doing them in the first place.
It's really incredible, actually, because as a river guide for, you know, 8-9 years now, I just knew sort of intuitively that I loved free-flowing rivers the most. I've had the opportunity to work on a few that are not dammed, and it's been really amazing. And it's one thing for me to say that, oh, I just really enjoy running a free-flowing river and for recreation, and it's beautiful and all that kind of stuff. But once I started digging deeper, especially in the last year or two, I've realized that there are so many more impacts that hydroelectric dams, especially mainstream reservoirs, have on massive environments and ecosystems. And to me, it's kind of crazy to say that hydroelectric, especially big, large mega dams, you know, these dams that are 500, 700 feet tall or impound you know, hundreds of millions of acre feet of water, that they are somehow green, that they're clean energy, because you can't say that something that is destroying so much environment and having such a great impact is green. You know, one of the things that nobody looked at for years is that there are massive downstream impacts from the dam. It's not just what is inundated upstream. So if you look at, for example, the Colorado River system, we're having really big problems right now with all the sediment buildup that's behind the Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon Dam. And actually, Glen Canyon Dam was in part constructed as a way to not have the sediment buildup behind Hoover. So that dramatically decreases the lifespan of a dam. So you also can't look at dams as being an indefinite source of energy either. Dams most definitely have a lifespan, and it's usually a lot shorter than what people anticipate.
What happens when a dam gets all this sediment buildup that you're talking about?
So a couple of things. First, that sediment can't move downstream. So again, you know, for a close to home example with the Colorado River, all of that sediment used to go out to the Colorado River Delta in the Gulf of Mexico. And since all of that sediment gets backed up behind those two dams, you don't have the nutrients and all the biotic material that would normally be going into that ecosystem to replenish farmland and wetlands and all that kind of stuff. And secondly, it decreases the amount of space that you can collect water in the reservoir. So they have a hard time actually measuring how much is lost, but I think, you know, probably close to a quarter of the capacity of Lake Powell is probably gone because of sediment buildup.
Then there's fish.
Fish, absolutely. You know, it's a very interesting thing because the native fish to the Colorado River, like the humpback chub and the razorback sucker and fish like that, they evolved within this river system that's incredibly silty. It gets really warm in the summertime. It's really low in the wintertime. It's got a really high spring runoff. And that's what, you know, that's the environment that they were able to evolve in. And now that you've cut off their sediment flow, you've completely changed the natural flow of it. So it's pretty much controlled by what the dam people want as far as energy and also, you know, what California wants down the line for their cities and their agriculture. And so now you have a really cold, very clear stream of water coming out of Glen Canyon Dam, for example. So where, you know, I mean, the river is called the Colorado because it was colorful at one point, and all the different side streams had different colored sediment that went in. And so you'd see anything from like a opaque white river to a bright orange river, or, you know, a dark brown river or something like that. So you had these really wide mixtures of colors, and now it's just clear. You can see 30 feet to the bottom at the put-in for doing the Grand Canyon on the Colorado. It's pretty wild. And the fish that survive in that kind of water are, you know, trout and that kind of cold water fish, and they are not native, and they push out the native fish as well, and so they make their habitat even more competitive and difficult to survive in.
It's such an interesting thing for you to be doing from your perspective as a river guide, because you know the river so much more intimately than people who are maybe talking about it and visiting it but not running it.
Yeah, it's a really, I feel really blessed to get to run rivers for my work, and, you know, in that way, just out of the simple fact that I make my living doing it, you know, that rivers really sustain me in that way. And it is really amazing because, you know, like I said, I've gotten to work on some rivers that are free flowing, and to get to see how they change over the course of a season versus a river that is just controlled by, you know, humans based on what they want to send down the river, you know, I see a big difference. It's much less alive in certain ways. For example, two of the rivers that I've run a number of times are the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon and the Yampa River in Colorado. The Yampa River is the last major, relatively undammed and free-flowing tributary to the Colorado. The last one, the only one. And the Colorado is very much controlled by a dam and by the Bureau of Reclamation folks that control Glen Canyon. And what you see down in the Grand Canyon is that a lot of non-native species have just overtaken even just the banks of the river, the tamarisk and the Russian olive and that sort of thing, largely because there's such a steady flow of water that they can sort of take hold in those sand banks. And in the Yampa, there's almost none of it because you get the big spring floods that wash that stuff away. And also, you know, in the Colorado, when in the early days of river running down there after the dam, they would fluctuate the flows between like 3,000 cubic feet per second, which is generally how river flow is measured, all the way up to like 25,000 cubic feet per second in a 24-hour period. It would never happen normally, except in pretty rare flash flooding circumstances in the monsoon season or maybe in the spring flooding. But you wouldn't have that day after day after day and with no sediment. And so what happened is it just scoured the beaches. I mean, you had these enormous, beautiful sandy beaches, and after 5 years, 10 years of them running the dam that way, they were gone. There was nowhere for people to camp. And then the Tamarisk and the Russian Aloe started taking hold. And for anyone who's listening that has ever run, you know, a river in the West, especially something like the San Juan, you know how horrible it is to have to bushwhack through that stuff. And, you know, it basically takes a lot of federal funding and taxpayer money to get rid of those invasive species just so that you can continue the recreation on those rivers.
We're talking to river guides Stephanie Wessel. And once again, you are going to Peru in July to run a river there. And I think it's such an interesting strategy. What you're doing is basically taking Peruvians who might not know that much about their own ecosystems, as we often don't know that much about ours, living in cities or whatever, and introducing them to the importance of the river in order to help the folks who actually live there to preserve their homes, their cultures, their traditions, their place, and to save their ecosystems from a really destructive dam.
Yeah, that is what we're trying to do. And, you know, I've just been talking about the Colorado River, and the really wild thing is that the Rio Marañón, which is where we're going to be running for 16 days, is very similar to the Colorado River. They call it the Grand Canyon of South America. It has big, tall, impressive walls like the Grand Canyon. You've got something like 4 or 5 Class 4 rapids, 40 Class 3 rapids, and 60 Class 2 rapids. So it's a really fun river to run. It's also, you know, incredibly dry up there, and so you also get a lot of the same sort of silt runoff that goes into that river and feeds the rest of the Amazon basin. I mean, that's the really incredible thing, is you can't look at these things as in a vacuum, because the Rio Marañón is the hydrological source of the Amazon, which means that it contributes the most water to the ultimate flow of the Amazon. There's obviously a lot of other rivers that are also contributing, but it's the biggest tributary. And so when you erect a big wall and you cut off all that sediment, you cut off so many nutrients to downstream ecosystems as well. So you're not just talking about the 1,000 people that are going to be displaced by this dam in particular, Chaden too, but you're also talking about hundreds of thousands of indigenous and small farmers who live along the river downstream, who will have their livelihoods greatly impacted, because you need to have those big floods to bring that sediment out over onto the riverbanks and to also sustain the fish populations that the fishermen downstream have. And then you're looking at cross-country borders as well, and you're looking at it impacting the Amazon in Brazil and all the way out to the ocean. So it's, you know, it's a really big deal for sure.
Environmentally, it's a really big deal. And what's so interesting about what's going on now is that economists are doing calculations that are showing that all the money that is spent on this, it doesn't even really in the long run help, or at least help that country or the people living in that country.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's pretty wild, actually. You know, I think the Hoover Dam is probably one of the only huge dams that's ever paid itself off. And it's pretty much that way across the developing world and even the developed world, that so many of these big dams, you know, generally they cost twice as much as the dam builders originally estimate. They take twice as long to build. They're not good at resolving really emergent energy crises because they take so long to build. And then it usually involves massive amounts of loans from places like the World Bank. And the World Bank almost always recoups their money, but it ends up costing the government of that developing country a huge amount of money to keep that dam up and keep it running and do the repairs on it. And make sure that it functions.
And so whatever they might get back in electricity, they're spending more in debt and upkeep.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that most of the times the people who are funding the dams, like the Brazilian corporations or, you know, the World Bank or whoever, there's a lot of pressure from those other players to subsidize the electricity. So they're not actually, you know, if you priced the cost of the energy that comes out of it so that you could recoup your losses, nobody would consider that to be a sustainable or even a cheap source of energy. It's certainly not a cheap source of energy. It's incredibly expensive. I mean, these are dams that are almost always in the billions of dollars, sometimes, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars to build. One dam. And they're talking about putting 20 dams on the Rio Marañon.
And so the winners are the bankers who make the loans, the engineering companies, and the extractive industries. And the losers are the government and citizens of whatever the developing country is, and the local people and the environment.
Absolutely. You hit it on the nail, pretty much. Yeah, it's the human costs, the social costs are just staggering, and you know, the really unfortunate thing is that it's probably also the, you know, the politicians in that country who get direct kickbacks. They, you know, there's a lot of bribery that goes on behind the scenes with these things. So the people who are approving the projects also reap the benefits, but then, you know, the government's down the line when they have to deal with these massive dams that really should be decommissioned and taken down, you know, yeah. At that point they don't have the money to do that, and then it becomes a danger and a hazard to everyone who's living downstream, because when one of those dams catastrophically fails, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of people who live downstream getting wiped out in a flood, maybe in the middle of the night, so they have no idea, and you know, it's probably still indigenous people that live down there, and there's no way of contacting them, and you know, so the risks absolutely outweigh the benefits on any balance sheet.
Now, the reality is also that there are all kinds of alternative energies that if countries want to generate their own energy for their own people, even on a reasonably large scale, they can do so.
Yeah, I think especially if you start looking at the real cost of the water and the electricity that comes out of these dams, if you truly price them at what it would make sense to recoup the losses, it's so much more cost effective to take those billions of dollars and invest it into things that local people can take control of, that they can learn about. They can have their solar panel, they can have their, you know, mini hydroelectric for small streams in their communities that they can take out, that are portable, that allow them to be autonomous and not dependent on a central government and not dependent on a big corporation that is building the dam. So there's a lot of ways to make this more about local communities and give them the tools to be really sustainable and actually benefit from energy projects. Whereas, you know, the chances are when they build this dam that the people who are being displaced, even though they don't have electricity right now for the most part, they probably won't have electricity from the dam later. So why not give them a solar panel, and probably won't cost that much money for the big lenders like the World Bank. And
right. It's funny, too, because as Americans, we have made all those mistakes, and to watch other countries making the same mistakes, you just want to take their politicians and shake them by the shoulders and say, don't you see what the path is that you're walking down?
Oh my gosh, I know. That's, you know, I struggled with my consciousness a little bit, and what, you know, what's my right as an American to go into Peru and say, like, you guys shouldn't build this dam? And then I kept looking at it and realized that, you know, with Hoover, we started this whole thing, and you know, everyone likes to make their own mistakes, but I just don't think that it's worth it. We need to be looking at, you know, our world as, you know, this is we are a global community, and we need to be looking at all of the resources and making sure that there's some sort of stability environmentally somewhere in the world, so that there's stability, you know, politically and economically, you know, especially in these developing countries, because they're the ones that still have a lot of the resources. And you know, it's not to say that we shouldn't be developing any resources at all, because that's silly, and I don't want to say that, you know, these indigenous folks shouldn't get electricity and running water in their homes. They absolutely should. I think that's their right, but I don't think it's the right of a government to push them out without consulting them.
Or another country to say, we want your minerals, therefore we're going to ruin your lives.
Right, yeah, and that's just not fair. And, you know, one of the really sad things with the resettlement of a lot of these indigenous people is that even though they live there for thousands of years, they may not have a normal deed to the property as we consider it. And so the government will say, oh, well, you're not actually a landowner, so we don't have to compensate you for owning land. And that's sort of how they operate. And it's, I don't know how someone who works with that logic could look me in the eye. There seems to be like a fundamental disconnect there between someone who can use that logic to push people out of their homes and someone who can look at a human and say, oh, that's another human, and they, like, I don't want them to suffer.
Yeah, and this is, it's a problem worldwide of seeing whatever your indigenous person is, whether in this country or another person, or your dark-skinned person, as less human than you are. And that's as much of a problem in Peru and in the entire continent of South America as it is here.
Yeah.
So you, Stephanie Wessel, are with a group called Paddling with Purpose. Tell us more about that organization.
So Paddling with Purpose was founded by an Australian man, Benjamin Webb, who's an environmental sciences major and found himself in Peru, and he's a kayaker, and so he started paddling these rivers and started meeting Peruvians and learned more about the projects that were in planning phases and are approved to be built, and started working with other local Peruvian kayakers and environmentalists to try to raise awareness about what's going on. And so he decided, I think in last fall, maybe November of 2014, that it would be great to get an international group of river runners and Peruvians to take Peruvians down the river. And we're going to make a documentary about everything that we're doing on the river to show Peruvians and the world how amazing this river is, and also to document the indigenous communities that are there and show the humanity of the people who live by the river and show how good their lives are right now. I mean, most of the time, again, these indigenous folks get pushed out, and maybe they get put into resettlement land that's arid without any water to develop it agriculturally, or they end up in cities and they're day laborers and they don't have regular jobs, and usually it devolves into alcoholism and, you know, just sort of itinerant employment, and it's bad all around. So Paddling with Purpose, we are, you know, using our love of rivers to give people the most amazing experience to get down the river and show how amazing it can be.
Now, there's so much pressure and money in the pro extraction, mineral extraction, in the pro dam building world. What about the movement that you're involved with, which is trying to bring some rationality and fairness to the equation? Is there some power? Is there head of steam in this movement?
Yeah, you know, maybe some of the listeners will be familiar with the campaign that happened successfully in Chile to stop dams in Chilean Patagonia. It was called Patagonia Sin Represas, and, you know, it was a mixture of indigenous folks that live there and international people who love that area. And it included, you know, lawyers from all over the world who helped navigate the legal system of Chile to really make an impact. And the Chilean government last year said, okay, we're not going to build dams on the Rio Baker and another river in Patagonia. So it was a huge, huge success. And hopefully, with enough voices and enough power behind it, we can actually, you know, make a difference and say something to the Peruvian government where they'll hear us.
So can people who are listening to this program get involved with Paddling with Purpose?
Yeah, so We are, right now there's about, I think there's seven of us river guides internationally, and several more boaters who are Peruvian, and the seven international folks are all raising our own money via Indiegogo or Crowdrise, trying to get our family and friends to support us. And we're definitely in the market for financial support because we're not going to be able to do this rafting trip and make the movie and have a big impact without the means to do that, which largely means that we need financial support. But, you know, there's also the group that's helping us outfit the trip is called Sierra Rios, which is another nonprofit that's working to save rivers in South America and Central America. And so the man who started that, Rocky Contos, he runs trips down there. So if, you know, someone wanted to take a trip down there, you could go to sierrarios.org and book a trip and see it for yourself. You know, if there's anyone listening who, you know, has some understanding of the Peruvian legal system or international codes and things like that, or a journalist who would be interested in doing investigative reporting about what's going on with the mining companies and the corruption within the dam business, you know, that's absolutely something that's needed, because I think that the a lot of the information that's about what's happening as far as corruption and people getting pushed out of their homes and things like that, it doesn't get accurately reported and sort of get suppressed by the local governments and also by the big companies that want these contracts. So really, I just encourage people to read as much as they can, even though it's really difficult because it feels so overwhelming.
I know, you read these articles and it's so enraging. Mm-hmm. It's so painful, and yet the pain you feel while reading it is nothing compared to what the people who were there are going through and will have to go through.
Yeah. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of these major dam projects that are, you know, in the planning stages or in the construction stages around the world. So this is just one small thing that's happening, but, you know, if we can stop this one, that shows a lot. And it shows a lot to, you know, the Brazilian government. You can't strong-arm Peruvians into giving up resources that they don't want to give up, into destroying their ecosystems that they don't want to leave.
And these people who, as you say, end up as the poorest of the poor in big cities, all the knowledge that they have built up for thousands of years is then lost.
Yeah, it's very sad. There's an anthropologist out of California. I think he's older. He's in his 80s. Thayer Scudder. And he, in his initial graduate work, he was asked to go study some folks in Zambia and in Zimbabwe, an indigenous tribe, the Tonga, 57,000 of whom were displaced by one of the first major hydroelectric dams in southern Africa. And so he studied them before they were displaced, studied everything that an anthropologist would, their religious customs, their agriculture, their everything. And then followed them after they were displaced. They were, you know, were given a new city, and over the course of, you know, 30, 40 years, they just have kind of imploded as a culture. They were shattered. They're much poorer than they were. Even, you know, generations later, grandchildren, great-grandchildren who were born into that culture are still feeling the effects of that dam. They never lived on the banks of the Zambezi, but they still feel the loss of it. And finally, some 50, 60 years after he started his work, he came out and said that there is no good dam project. And he spent his career trying to consult on big dam projects to make sure that the resettlement was done right, that there were environmental flows, that it took into account, you know, the cost of everything, the social, the environmental impacts, making sure that that happened. And he never saw one succeed, which I think is a pretty powerful statement.
Yes, indeed. Stephanie Wessel is a river guide, and she's an activist with Paddling with Purpose, and we will link to that at santafe.radiocafe.org. The website is paddlingwithpurpose.com, and I hope that when you come back, you will give us another report.
Thank you.